From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. An asteroid strike took out the dinosaurs, and a meteor that struck Chelyabinsk, Russia a few years ago woke the astronomy community to the need for a better system for tracking asteroids that could affect Earth. Now, an international asteroid warning network has gotten its first test. Hear how it went. Also, aquaculture isn't just fish. There's oysters and mussels, and now kelp. Could it be the new kale? Or could it replace corn as a source of low-carbon biofuel? And an EPA scientist who made headlines when she was barred from presenting at a conference talks about what it's like when science and politics collide. First, it's cold and flu season, which means it's time for your yearly flu shot. But why do we have to do this every year? Why can't we get a flu shot once, maybe a booster now and again, but basically be done with it like we do with other vaccinations? Not surprisingly, there are scientists working to accomplish just that. But new work by researchers at the New York Influenza Center of Excellence at the University of Rochester Medical Center have found that some efforts to develop a universal flu vaccine may not be as bulletproof as hoped. David Topham is the Marie Curran Wilson and Joseph Chamberlain Wilson Professor in the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at the University of Rochester Medical Center, and he's the lead author on that new study. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi.
All right, let's start with basics. Why do we have to get a new flu shot every single year?
Well, there's really two reasons. The first reason is that the virus often changes, and it does this on a regular basis under what we call immune pressure from immunity in the population. So the virus is trying to escape that immunity so it can still be passed around. The second reason is that the durability of immunity to influenza is not great. So after about a year, you've lost that immunity that you got from last year's vaccine, right?
Really? I mean, is that different than for other diseases where you maintain lifelong immunity?
It is, and that's actually one of the things we're trying to understand why it's different. It turns out that you retain immunity lifelong to the influenza viruses you saw as a child, but not to the ones you see as an adult.
That's fascinating. Do we and we don't have any idea what the immune system changes are that are responsible for that. I mean, presumably this is some sort of co-evolution with the flu vaccine over millions of years that we've ended up with an immune system like this?
Yeah, exactly. And we don't, I wish I could tell you I understood why it works that way.
Don't we all?
We have a lot of hints. You know, we think there's something different about how you see the virus when you're a child than when you're an adult. And that initial exposure then colors your response to flu for the rest of your life.
Does that potentially mean that if we had a broad or universal flu vaccine that we could give to kids, it might last their whole life?
I don't think it's going to last our whole life, but what we're shooting for is a vaccine that can provide at least 75% protection. In other words, 75% of the people that get exposed don't get infected, and would last at least 5 years. That's our current goal.
I'm talking with David Topham. He's a professor of microbiology and immunology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. So part of the other problem, of course, is that we don't have a really broad or universal vaccine. We have vaccines that are targeted to like three or maybe four different specific strains of influenza. And even then, sometimes it doesn't work. The vaccine of the year kind of misses whatever the strain is that's actually floating around, right? And the World Health Organization says those vaccines actually tend to be only like 40 to 70% effective, sometimes lower. So why? What are the obstacles to getting that right?
There's, again, two things. There's the viruses that circulate are variable. None of them are an exact match for what's in the vaccine. The vaccine is a best guess or best approximation. And not everybody responds to the vaccine equally. We find that some people, even though they're vaccinated, they still have low antibody titers.
And as you alluded to, researchers have to kind of make their best guess, or vaccine developers have to make their best guess, what, like 6 months in advance?
At least.
To you know, say, okay, this is what we think is going to be the strain or the strains that are most problematic this coming flu season. When they're making that, what's it based on? Is there any sort of computer modeling of the evolution, or any sort of, you know, kind of forecasting like we get for weather? Or is this really just a best guess?
Well, what we do is, and we the royal we, it's the community, research community. Organizations like CDC and the WHO conduct global surveillance. For us to pick a vaccine for our flu season, which is our winter, we look at the viruses that circulate in the southern hemisphere when it's their winter, because those are often the ones that show up 6 months later in our area.
And then presumably the flip, the reverse of that happens, and we look at what we actually had here during our flu season and use that to vaccinate then the southern hemisphere?
Exactly.
My guest is David Topham. He's professor of microbiology and immunology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. We're talking about efforts to develop a universal flu vaccine. Dave, you were saying, you know, the goal is what? Greater than 75% protection for at least 5 years. That's not truly universal. But when we talk about this push to develop a more permanent, broader flu vaccine, what are some of the strategies? How different would that vaccine be from what we've got right now?
So the predominant strategy right now, and there are a number of efforts looking at this, is to generate a vaccine that consists of parts of the influenza virus that are more conserved, okay, the ones that don't undergo what we call antigenic drift or mutation, or if they do undergo mutation, it's much more slow. There's a virus protein called the hemagglutinin, and that is the protein on the virus that's responsible for attaching to the cells that the virus is going to infect. And the hemagglutinin is, if you think of it as like a flower, with the flower portion at the top and then a stem. The stem part of the protein doesn't change very often. There is some variability, but it's much lower than it is on the head. The head changes constantly. And right now, our current vaccines focus our immune response almost entirely on that head domain, which is why we have to change it and update it on a regular basis. But we think if we can immunize in a way to boost responses to that stem region, that will provide a degree of protection and is less likely to change, which means we won't have to update the vaccine as often.
Why is this the predominant target at this point? I mean, especially if the head part is changing constantly, why is that what we have targeted for vaccines so far?
Well, so research in the past, I would say 10 years or so, maybe a little bit more, we've identified antibodies that cross-react to that portion of the protein and have shown in animal models to be protective. So we know if we can get the right antibodies to that region, they can be protective. So that's why it's the main focus.
I mean, that's something that our immune system already kind of likes or seems prone to responding to and really fighting off?
Yeah, so it's interesting. We all have some antibodies to the stock already. It's just that they're at very low levels in most people. Our predominant response is to the what we call epitopes, the places where the antibodies bind on the head of the protein. So again, if we come up with a construct that can boost responses to the stock, we think if we can get the antibody levels high enough, then people will be protected.
I'm talking with microbiologist and immunologist David Topham of the University of Rochester Medical Center about efforts to develop a universal flu vaccine. Dave, you know, this sounds great. Okay, we're going to target the stalk part of this flower-like protein. It doesn't seem to change and evolve as much, so that might give us broader coverage. But you then just have published this study that says, well, actually, that stalk part of the hemagglutinin protein actually changes more than we thought. So are we barking up the wrong flower? I guess not tree. Are we barking up the wrong flower?
You know, so I have a much more positive view on the work that we did. I think what we did showed that it's much harder to drive mutations in that stalk domain than it is to drive mutations in the head. So we showed that if you passage the virus in the presence of antibodies in a tissue culture in a lab,
right? So it's like it's under real pressure there. Its host is trying to kill it.
Exactly. You grow the virus under that pressure, and then the virus because it has an enzyme that uses to replicate its genome. It's an error-prone enzyme, so it makes mistakes all the time, and that introduces mutations into the viruses that are being produced. And if one of those has an advantage because it escapes from those antibodies, then that's the one that's going to grow out. So we showed that it takes up to 16 cycles of passage to get mutations in the stalk when we grow it in the presence of stalk-specific antibodies, whereas in the head domain, one passage is sufficient to see mutations in the head domain. So the head is much more plastic and able to change than the stalk. But as you said, you can't assume that it's not going to change at all. You know, as an immunologist, that's why we did the work, because nobody seemed to be asking that question. You know, what happens if we do achieve a vaccine that can induce strong stalk immunity? What's going to happen to the virus? And I think that's important for us to know.
Well, let's think about that in the context of humans during flu season. That those 16 passages, does that mean going through 16 people and still within one flu season you've worn out the usefulness of this vaccine? Or does that mean maybe 16 flu seasons of this strain and this vaccine kind of going at each other in the whole population?
So I think it may happen. I don't know if it's 16 people. I don't know if you can make a direct comparison like that, because it really depends on how strong someone's immunity is. I mean, when we did the experiments in the lab, the immunity we were applying was very strong. So I don't think we know the answer to how long it will be or how many infections it would take to start to see mutations in the stalk. But again, they're going to be relatively slow, and we didn't see a large number of them. Maybe not number, but variety. They were very limited in where they occurred. So, it's the kind of thing I don't think we'll really know till we do the human experiment, where we try this and we see what happens. But I always think eyes wide open, right? We want to know what to expect and what's possible, even if we don't know exactly what's going to happen. So that's why we do this research.
You've already alluded to the fact that a lot of people are doing this kind of research. And actually, there have been multiple kind of announcements just this month, one from University of Nebraska, another one from researchers at the University of Georgia and Sanofi Pasteur, which is the largest flu vaccine manufacturer in the world. They're trying different tactics, like making vaccines that actually target multiple genes or multiple variants of a gene. So not just, okay, here's our one stalk of this one protein that we want to, but, kind of a broader swath of those, or maybe trying to find genes that kind of like this stalk part that are conserved, that are the same across all flu vaccines. Do you think we're making progress? Are we on the right track? And do you have any guesstimate of when we might see a better flu vaccine than this annual vaccine that we're dealing with right now?
Well, so I can tell you that, as you just mentioned, in addition to the stalk, there are other strategies to achieve more broadly cross-protective immunity. It's hard to guess at when we would actually see something on the market, but I think it's good that we try more than one approach. The NIH, Anthony Fauci, who's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, recently announced a major shift in emphasis for the Institute in terms of the research that we do on flu vaccines. He wants to achieve a universal flu vaccine in less than 5 years. You got to set a goal and try for it. So I think you're going to see more and more efforts, not only to create a better vaccine, but also to understand human immunity to influenza better, so that we can be more rational about the way we design vaccines.
Is there any potential that, as we kind of see with bacteria and antibiotics, that as we ramp up our antibiotic efforts, they ramp up their evolution to antibiotic resistance? Is there any chance that this broader, stronger flu vaccine that we're working toward right now could kind of backfire and turn into even stronger, faster evolving flu virus?
No, I think actually it'd just be different kinds of mutations. The work that we did actually showed, so I'll back up a little bit. One of the things that scientists thought would happen is that if you drove mutation in the stalk of the hemagglutinin on influenza, that the viruses that came out would be less fit. In other words, they wouldn't grow as well. We showed in our work that we had some viruses that came out and were less fit. They grew less well than the virus we started with. But we had other viruses that grew just as well. So what we didn't see were viruses that grew better. So I think, Mother Nature is doing these experiments already. So all the mutations that we saw in the lab, we can see in viruses that are already circulating. So I don't think we're going to make the virus any worse than it already is. It just might become different. And that means we'll have to update even a universal flu vaccine. But as I said, we're hoping, maybe we can stretch that out so that we don't have to do it every year. We can do it every 5 years, because we spend an awful lot of money trying to guess the right strain and produce these vaccines. And then, to have low effectiveness is rather disappointing.
David Topham is professor of microbiology and immunology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dave, thanks so much, and stay healthy this flu season.
Yes, you too. Get your flu shot.
Up next, while we were all blissfully unaware, NASA and agencies around the globe last month tested their ability to protect us from an asteroid strike. Hear how it went when Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.